Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Pei Hei. And what's really wonderful is that over the next days, when we're still holding in Shavuos, as you know, because we have 7 days of Shavuos, including all of the days that we can make up the Karbonos of Shavuos, those of you who remember the Sugya and Chagiga, guess what our Gemara is going to be talking about? Kabbalat HaTorah. All of the different midrashim about the dating of the Kabbalat HaTorah, the dinim of Kabbalat HaTorah, exactly what happened and so on, which is perfect for our season. Okay, but now we're going to be finishing this sugya of Aruga. So we are, remember, in the middle of a fascinating perek that whose common denominator so far seems to be finding remozim in psukim for various halachas that we have not seen are related to each other in any particular way. And the last thing that we learned was that we found a remez in the Torah from the pasuk of Ki ka'aretz totzit simcha u'chagana zeru'ea tatzmiach, that somehow from there we learn out that it is possible to plant what would normally be kilayim in a small patch of 6x6. And the reason that we, even though it didn't say in that perk 6x6, but the reason that we gave 6x6, because we said that the Rabbanan had worked out that in that amount of space, you're able to be marchik 1.5 tvachim from the roots of each one of these stalks so that you don't have intersecting circles. And thereby, you would avoid any type of yanika. And as far as the question of how is it that you would be able to make a long line on all four sides of the various different types over there, you certainly don't have three tvachim between the corners. That's because we rely on the graphics. And since kilayim has to be near like kilayim, as long as the graphics are good, and in places where the graphics aren't particularly striking, like from the middle to the sides, there, as long as you don't have what appears to be clearly mixed roots, because you have a tefach and a half on each one of the bottoms that don't intersect, that would give us essentially the possibility of getting the aruga nicely done with five separate minim. Now, the truth is, if we wanted to, we could even have gotten 9 separate minim, because as long as we just planted one seed at each corner, one seed in the middle, and one seed in the middle of each one of the rows, that would give us really plenty, and we could go down the whole way. We wouldn't have to be stuck just with a middle seed. So we could have 3 rows of 3 seeds. But we're trying to make some really effective use of the space. Now, Lemaisa, the Rambam, takes for granted in explaining even the Mishnah here that the middle is not a seed. The middle is the entire middle is planted. But according to the Rambam, it's planted like a diamond. So if you plant a diamond, the graphics are very powerful. Lemaisa, he's relying on the way the Gemara is going to work out later today, as we'll see. But the Pashtus, when we read the Mishnah, we don't know yet about the fact that you can rely on a diamond shape in the middle. Remember, if you had a diamond shape in the middle, basically you'd be using almost the entire area for your seeds. Because when the diamond comes up against any of the four sides, it's clearly delineated graphically, right? So you don't have to worry about any kind of harchoka there at all where there's that kind of delineation. But we didn't get to that yet. So the first opening approach that we have to the Mishnah is the approach that we took in Rashi. And Rashi admits that this is not the approach that he was taught, and he says there are many other approaches I was taught. Frankly, I don't like any of them. So this is the pshat, and I've heard all the pirushim, and I still don't like them. So this is the pshat that he's left us with, and it's really a very, very simple way of understanding the sugya. So we got up to the end of the Gemara that spoke about the fascinating question, where do we get the idea that the Chachamim know anything about horticulture? Which is an amazing, amazing question for the Chachamim to ask. Who says that you can rely on the Chachamim? My God, if somebody asked this question today, that's it. They'd be booted out of Klal Yisrael, right? Okay, but the Gemara wants to know, how do you know that the Chachamim have any right to make this determination? The answer that the Gemara brings is not from anything that has to do with the Chachamim. It's actually from a bunch of Goyim, and that is from the B'nai Chori of Seir, and which we call the Chori Yoshev Haaretz, or also called the Chivi, which it starts points out. Don't get confused with the Shiva Amamim. This has nothing to do with Shiva Amamim. They were called the Chivi because of their profound ability to be able to taste the ground, Chori because they could smell the ground. So all we bring a raya from over there is the fact that, yes, people are certainly able to be sensitive enough to be able to determine the amount of yinika that is proper per different minim. And because of that, once we see that that's the case in the Torah, so then we can rely on the Chachamim that they're doing a good job of it as well. But the fact that somebody tells you, I am a Chacham, and therefore you can rely on me, don't mean anything to the Gemara. So anyway, keep that in mind, because it's a very important point. Okay. No, actually, I made a bracha achrona. Okay, next time I'll make a bracha. Okay, so we got up to Rav Acha bar Yaakov Omer. Yes, we did that. All right, we got up to Omer Rav Asi. So Omer Rav Asi is about one-third of the way up, a couple of lines above one-third of the way up. Omer Rav Asi, aruga tocha shisha chutz migivuleha. When we're talking about the aruga, you have to understand that we are not discussing the area around the aruga. Because if in fact, there would be other arugot in this field, so then you would have to have some kind of boundary, right, in between the various arugot. So when we're talking about a boundary, there's also a boundary around it, which we'll discuss later, but this shear of the aruga is the actual planted area. You'll notice that in Ira's little planter that he's got there, there's a little thing to walk around, and that would be called the gvul. So we're going to be talking about how large that gvul is. Now, Tanya Namiachi, aruga tocha shisha. So the Braita says, yes, the planted area of the aruga is 6x6. How large is the gvul of this aruga? Kedetan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, rochav kimlo rochav parasa. That it's as wide as your foot, which is the same shear, basically, of a tefach. So it's like the full tefach of a hand. And we're going to bring even a raya from the pasuk for that. Now we'll see who cares whether there's a gvul around it. We'll see, Lagabi, what that is nogea. But clearly the Gemara is coming to define a technical term called an aruga. And that aruga, if it has just a 6x6, it may be okay to plant in it, but it will not have all the rights, the halachic rights of an aruga. And we're going to see what those additional issues are that are coming up. What's the basis of this in the Torah? Omer Rabbi Zeir v'itamer Rabbi Chanina bar Papa, my time at Rabbi Yehuda. Where does Rabbi Yehuda see that it's a foot width? Dechtiv v'ishkita barak lecha, kigan hayarak, ma regel tefach, af gvunami tefach. So over there where the Torah is talking about the vegetable gardening in Mitzrayim, where over there you need to artificially irrigate and so on, So it says, it mentions, for no obvious reason, that you have to water it with your feet. I mean, I don't know, your feet is an interesting way of saying it. I mean, you just say water it by hand, we would have said, you know. But the idea over here is that it's giving you a shear. You need to be able to walk around this in order to be able to reach all of the vegetation. And that gives you a shear of a tefach around the edges. Again, we have not defined who cares yet. But that means that a technical term called an aruga would include 6x6 tefachim surrounded by an area that apparently is unplanted with an additional tefach for you to be able to walk around. Omar Rav, let me explain something to you about our Mishnah. Our Mishnah doesn't really give a hang about that, because our Mishnah is not talking about a field with a bunch of these patches in it. It's talking about a single aruga in the middle of a parking lot. There's no other arugas around it. So this is an aruga b'churva shanino. And that, and only that, is the reason that this is mutter. Because if there were other arugot all around this aruga, then you would have a problem. Because even if it were a technical aruga, and it did have the gvul around it, and let's say the aruga next to it would also have been a technically kosher aruga, and it also would have had a gvul around it, what would have been the total distance of the two gvulot? Two tefachim. But we said that in order to have a legal distance between different types of plants, you need to have three tefachim. Unless, of course, they're graphically matched, marked as separate. But if you have all your arugot the same, and those arugot look the way Rashi defined the aruga, namely, there's a long line that goes almost up to the end on all four directions, and there's one seed in the middle, right? Now, as soon as I put that aruga up next to another aruga, I'm in big trouble. Because the lines that are going in that direction in the adjacent aruga are only two tefachim away from a different species in the other aruga. So therefore, our Mishnah that does not make any allowances for that, says Rav, has got to be talking about an aruga that's in a parking lot. And that way we avoid the whole problem. Ask the Gemara, what's Rav's problem? I don't understand. V'ha'ika mokom kranot. It's very simple. You can arrange it in such a way that you will always have three tefachim between the seeds. And how, the rows. How could you do that? So take a look at the picture that Rashi shows of nine different arugot right up next to each other. There's a simple way to avoid the problem of one aruga mixing with another aruga. Remember that as long as we have the patches going in opposite directions, north-south versus east-west, we don't have a problem, right? I can make every single part of each aruga going in an opposite direction by alternating every aruga in such a way that whatever touches the one next to it is always going to be on a perpendicular. Nothing will be parallel. All I have to do is take a simple pattern and then repeat that pattern. The pattern is that instead of what Rashi was saying initially, that the case would be, in the case of the Mishnah, if it were indeed in a parking lot, that we would have all four sides completely planted with one thing in the middle. Don't have all four sides completely planted. Have each side halfway, but leaving a half of a tefach until the midpoint in each direction. What that will give you is an additional tefach between the end of one and the beginning of the next. Now, do not worry about the fact that in reality, it doesn't do that because all it does is deal with the diagonal, correct? In other words, imagine over here, take a look at closely at the diagram. I hope that you have a good diagram in Rashi? I don't know how the older Gemaras have. Do we have a nice diagram in Rashi? Calvin.
It's usable. It's a bit faded, but it's usable.
Okay. How about Ari, sweetie? Are you hiding behind Calvin? Could you please show yourself?
I'm using Sfaria, maybe, but hold on.
Oh, okay. All right. So you do not have access to a... you do not have access to a good picture?
I've got my other Gemara here. Here also, hold on.
Oh, no, I thought you could actually give us an electronic picture. Okay, I mean, that I can do also. I can show you the picture. My Gemara is decent. Right? Okay, so I don't know if you can make it out even. Oh, there we go. Okay, Naftali's got a nice picture. Yes, and that's drawn to scale also. So take a look at Naftali's picture. What you have is you have the two tvachim. Each square here is a tefach ala tefach. You have two tefachim between each square, right? Then you have a half a tefach on from you the side. Let's take the one on the upper right, okay? So in the upper right square, on the left-hand side, the row only comes to within a half a tefach of the middle. And on the next square, the row on the right that is going to be adjacent to it doesn't really get near it because it only comes up to half a tefach from the bottom, right? Okay, so if we include the two tefachim between and we add this tefach, which is between one and the other, it's true that in order to do this, you would have to make a right turn because if you simply take a line and you draw a diagonal from the end of one to the end of the other, it would only be two plus the diagonal of the four, right? You wouldn't get a full three. But nonetheless, this gives us basically the takona of the three in terms of intersecting circles from the middle ends. So because of that, it would be fine. Therefore, the Gemara asks, what makes Rav suggest that the only way that we could possibly make this work would be by having it in the middle of a parking lot? It's very simple. Just have a pattern that is similar to the one that I just showed you, says the Gemara. And Rav could have said, we're talking about an aruga, and it's in the middle of a whole field of these arugas, and there could be as many of them as you want. Answers the Gemara, Amri Beirav Mishmei Derav. In Rav's yeshiva, they say, well, the reason that Rav didn't say that is because Rav taught us that the case in the Mishnah is talking about B'memale et Hakiranot, that we were talking about a case that the simple case of the Aruga Shishisha Shisha Tvachim was his understanding that we planted the entire side on two sides. And then we put three seeds in the middle row, and that gave us the five. So we had an entire length that was planted on the upper part and on the lower part, let's say. And then we had three separate species planted in the middle row. And therefore, there would be no way to do that. What do you mean there would be no way to do that? V'lizro me'avroi v'lolim le'migavoi. What is the problem? Don't fill the very edges like we told you. And why did Rav have to say that we do? Take a look. If you have the Bach, do you have the Bach Ot Aleph? Or does Naftali have an electronic version of the Bach Ot Aleph? Because that's basically what we're asking, the way Rashi understands it. Do we have it? We don't have it? Okay, let me try to show it to you.
I have the normal Gemara one.
Okay, I don't know what the normal Gemara is. I have the Oz Vahadar, so is the normal Gemara like this, or it's too small to really see, isn't it? I don't.
Not, it's not small. Rebbe's camera is not sharp.
No, my camera's sharp. I just can't get it up to the camera. Let me see. I don't have enough light. Also. Right here. This is the case. So Rav's middle piece, as you can see, has got the entire thing completely filled on top and on bottom. So the Gemara is asking what forces Rav to worry about the parking lot scenario, where all he would have to do to avoid mixing these things is to make sure that the other ones don't go all the way to the end. And if they don't go all the way to the end and they stop somewhere before the end, then they're not going to get anywhere near the whole long lines that were in Rav's original case. There's still plenty of ways to make it work, even if Rav understood that the aruga in the Mishnah is referring to a mamaleh, the entire side of the aruga, because the other ones don't have to be a parking lot, for God's sake. They could be slightly less efficient arugot. But, I mean, it seems overkill to say it's got to be in a parking lot. It doesn't have to be in a parking lot. It's true that they won't be as efficient as the other ones. Fine. It's a big deal. And the truth is, they're not that much more inefficient because you are not limited to only putting in three seeds in the middle row. If you do it this way, you can have sort of a small part. As long as you leave on these sides, you leave the one and a half on all sides. So what's the big deal? Answers the Gemara, you're right, technically, that we could be Lizra Mi'avroi V'loli Mali Mi'gavoi. We could make sure that we don't fill it up, but it's a gezeira shem yamalei atakronot. Rav is concerned, what would happen if you would fill up the krono? What would happen if you would make the other ones the same way you made the first one? So if you would do that, then you would get back into this problem again. And therefore, he answers it, and he says the Mishnah wasn't telling you you could fill up your whole field like this. The Mishnah was telling you it's possible to make one aruga like this without any problems, as long as you're not surrounded by any other. Says the Gemara, what is the problem even if you would? There's still no problem. Because the truth is, there's no need for you to have, as we've mentioned many times, there's no need for you to really have three tefachim between them, as long as you would have a graphical representation, correct? So then if that's the case, v'lo yehe ela rosh tur yerek, all that you would have over here would be a piece of one meeting another one at a triangle. In other words, as long as it was going towards the other one and was not actually exactly the same direction and so on, it would be the equivalent of a Rosh Tor. What is a Rosh Tor? A Rosh Tor is the head of a shor. The head of a shor is the way we refer to a basically sort of triangular shape, which was very common in agricultural fields, where because of the turning of the plow, what they would do is they would have a slightly longer furrow as they came towards the middle, and then would shorten it as they go to the two edges. And what that created was essentially a triangular shape, which as it's coming next to the field next to it, would be clearly delineated graphically. And therefore, there would be no problem at all in the din of being marchik from Yanika, because it would simply, all you need to do is have the other arugot go on an angle, and then everything would be perfect. So there's no problem whatsoever. We don't need to have an actual space of three. Ah, that's because Rav holds Ein Rosh Tur Ba'aruga. You cannot rely on that. If you've got a big field, a big field makes a real graphic splash when you're flying over it, right? You can see beautifully how those fields fit into each other. When you're talking about a small area of 6x6, it's just not a powerful enough graphic for your eye to be considered between two arugot. It looks too much like they're all one field and that they're not really separated just because a little patch has a different shape to it. And because of that, Rav is afraid that it's going to end up becoming kilayim. So let's see that inside. Can't it just be a Rosh Tur Yerek? Doesn't it say, Haya Rosh Tur Yerek nichras toch sadeh acher mutar, mipnei shenira sof sadeh? Doesn't it say, beferish in the Mishnah in Kilayim, that if you have one field that ends with a triangle, and it's cutting into a row on another field, it makes absolutely no difference, because there's no kilayim since the Rosh Tor is very powerfully separated graphically. Where Shmuel disagrees. So Ibrav says, in Rosh Tor b'Yerek. Shmuel disagrees. Shmuel says there is such a thing as a Rosh Tor and a Yerek, and there's no problem. We could simply make an Aruga ben Harugot, exactly the way that we described it before in Rashi. And all you need to do, ask the Gemara, wait, but aren't they going to be mixing because of the filling up the entire edge? No, I don't mean to do that. I mean, benote, shur lekan, v'shur lekan. Exactly what we said, the diagram ought to be such that every shura is offset from every other shura and ends up becoming not parallel, but perpendicular. So that's all you need to worry about. And therefore, it's perfectly kosher, the same as a Rosh Tur would be. It's enough of an indication that it's a separate area. Omar Ula, Bo'u b'ma'arava, Hivkia telem echad apne kula mahu. What if you would actually rip through the entire aruga? And this could be done in two ways. You could rip through the entire aruga, digging a furrow straight through the middle. That furrow would be one tefach deep by one tefach wide, which is a standard furrow. And since it's deep, it is clearly not meant to be part of the aruga. In other words, you've busted through the aruga, say, with this furrow that's going through your whole field. And the question is, if I do it straight through the middle, so then I could have my fifth species planted in this furrow throughout, along the whole way. Even though it comes at the end, it actually intersects the sides that it goes through. And it wouldn't matter, possibly, because the very fact that the furrow per se is indicated as being separate because of its depth, so it seems to be a triangle going into the ground, and therefore you do not see it as part of the aruga itself, maybe that would be okay. There's another possibility here in which I take the furrow and put it right next to the middle, not directly through the middle, and I put in a sixth species. So I still have my seed in the middle, and now I put in a completely different species cutting through in this furrow. Is the furrow part of the aruga, and therefore it kills it? Or is the furrow so clearly separated from the aruga that we look at the aruga as absolutely the way we did before? The furrow doesn't affect it. It's sort of like a double exposure is the way to see it. In other words, you see it as two completely separate things that are one inside the other. There's a furrow. Okay, forget about the furrow. What's the area on top? The area on top is the aruga. What's that other thing? That's on a different level. So in other words, the aruga we were talking about on a two-dimensional level, if you add the furrow, then according, the question would be, can we play three-dimensional chess and we can actually view the furrow as not being part of that dimension at all? So that's a separate furrow. That's all. Or do we say, no, look, come on, I mean, your eye is not that clear about a three-dimensional chess game over here. And the mice, if you put a furrow through it, you mess it up. That was the question. So this was a shaila that was raised in the Yerushalmi, B'mar Rava, Hivkia telem echad al pnei kulam mahu, and Reb Sheshes says, well, then you've really messed things up. Because then, ba irvuv ubitelat hashura, a furrow is not played in a third dimension. Ravasi Amar, Ravasi says nonsense. It certainly is. A furrow is not part and is not seen as part of the aruga and cannot mess up the aruga. So in aruvo mivatelat hashura, the shura over here does not mean the furrow. It means etashura, the proper way in which to see the aruga. Now look, this is all Rashi's approach. There are many different approaches. It's a very clear and well-articulated approach, and it's fine for us to use this as the pshat in the Gemara. I don't think this is our big focus over here is to know all of the five different approaches. There are five basic approaches to this whole sugya. This is one of them. I don't think it's a big problem. And the truth is, personally, I don't believe there's really five approaches because I think that Rashi's approach is an approach that's being based on the Mishnah as it currently stands, not incorporating what some of the other, and again, in my opinion, what some of the other approaches are already incorporating the Gemara later on and sticking it into the Mishnah, as we'll see in a moment. So, ask the Gemara, Eitve Ravina L'Rav Ashi. Now, Rav Ashi didn't say anything over here, and that's why there's a change in Girsa where Rav Asi is meant to be Rav Ashi Omar, Eine Ruvu Mevatel Es Ashura, that a single Shura going through an Aruga is seen as being in a third dimension and not destroying the Aruga. And Ravina asks from the following Mishnah. So Ravina asks Rav Ashi, and here we're talking about a field, not an aruga, a real field, a large field, and we're not planting these little vegetables in the garden, we're planting these very large growing plants. So if you have two shurot of kishu'in, which grow very, very large, very big, spreading a lot of branches, a lot of leaves, and a lot of spreading kishuin. Why do you say kishuin in squash or gourd? Squash, yeah, squash or gourds. And then you have another two shurot of, let's say, pumpkin. And then you have another two shurot of pol hamitzri. Now, all of these things have very large leaves. You would be allowed to do that. Why? Because two shurot are themselves large enough to be considered a full field. So there you've got different fields, and the very fact that they're in separate furrows is all the graphical representation that you would need. But if you have only shura achat shel kishuin, v'shura achat shel dilui, v'shura achat shel pol hamitzri, asur. Now, according to you, why would it be asur? If you're telling me that a furrow is clearly something that announces itself as being different, so why wouldn't we just see the very fact that there's a furrow as being enough? Why do we need the two furrows to give it a din of a separate field? That should be irrelevant because of the representation that a furrow gives us of being separate. No, come on. There's no comparison. Shani Yocha Deika Shar Aka. We're talking about these big plants over here where the leaves spread out all over the place. And the final result is a mess of different things growing into other things without enough of an area to set each one of them aside as a separate field. That's no good. But we're not talking about those kind of things here. We're talking about these patches of let's say some lavender, different things that you're going to use as spices and so on, that you're having close up to each other. They don't have those kind of branches. They're not going to get into each other. And I'm claiming that says Rav Ashi, a furrow that runs through that kind of thing is so evidently something else that it's irrelevant. Omrev Kana Omrev Yochanan, I think that you're getting the wrong impression over here, because we have not really, in this Mishnah, we have not really made use of the idea of graphical representation clearly. And I'll tell you why I say that, because what we're doing is we're simply saying, okay, without further ado, how many different types of things can be placed inside of an area of 6x6 without its looking like a mess? That's basically what we're asking, right? So the Mishnah is not giving you all of the options as to how you could best do that, because then it would have to explain a lot more. It's just giving you some very raw data. And the pshatim that we've been discussing are the kind of pshatim that deal with that raw data. But let me jazz it up for you a little bit, okay? Because if you really want to take a graphic designer for your field, and you want to figure out how you could make better use of the area, there's much better ways to make use of the area. As a matter of fact, you could basically fill up the entire thing. I'll show you how you can fill up the entire thing. Suppose you've got this large field. You want your entire garden to be filled up with useful vegetation, okay? All you need to do is you make your typical aruga of 6x6. Now, what you do is you plant a circle that has a radius of 5 inside of the aruga of 6x6. Then you can fill up all of the sides of the circle with whatever the heck you want. Because basically what you've done over there is you've made it so clear that this is meant to be a graphically defined separate area that you wouldn't have to worry about anything very much, and that way you could use the entire area beautifully, because each place is seems to be clearly separate from the other. So then if you had you would just fill up down to the area where it goes to only a chatzi tefach on each side, and you would stop there. You could have basically your 5 species with almost the entire thing completely filled up. But wait a minute. What do you mean you could do that? How could you do that? What about, we're talking about over here, you've got a lot of these things one up against each other, but the area between them, which is the tefach that surrounds them, that's the gvul, right? Because the 6x6 was besides the gvul. So those gvulim, if you're claiming you could really take the whole area and plant it, how could you plant that? If you planted that, then you'd really be in trouble, because then you would have nothing that graphically delineates and nothing that separates the various minim. So you would have a yanika without graphic representation. You're claiming that I'll be able to actually take a big field and plant it like this, but that's really misrepresenting it. Says Igmar, no, it's not. It's very simple. So it could be, the way Devei Reb Yannai says, well, he didn't mean literally the whole thing, you know. He meant, obviously, between the different ones, you're going to have to really not be mamali. And what Reb Yochanan was talking about was only being mamali each one of these circles. The Rambam, by the way, because of this, learns that the situation here is 5 circles, not one big circle and then these areas that you fill in completely, but one big circle in the middle and then circular areas on each of these sides. in each of the triangular sort of sides so that you don't run into trouble just having the two parts, the two tvachim in between them. Rav Ashi says, you can plant the whole darn thing. All you have to do is be careful that the direction of the planting is opposite. And that's all. So let's say that you've got things that are planted north-south, right, in your arugot. So then plant east-west. So in other words, if something is a warp plant, give it a weft plant. And that way, in the middle, nobody's going to think that the middle is just mixing with the things on the sides because it's running in opposite directions. And we already said that that's a sufficient graphic representation. At least it was when we weren't getting that close. I'm saying that Rabbi Yochanan is including that as well. So ima yuzor inshiti zoran arev. If the ones on the side of the circle were arev, then zoran shiti, and it should be absolutely fine. Eitve Ravina Ravashi, this doesn't make any sense. It says avodat yerek biyerek acher. Look at the lashon over here, and you'll see this is the lashon of the bright and the tosefta. It says avodat yerek biyerek acher is shishatvachim. Okay, fine. But then look what the Braita adds, which seems to throw a monkey wrench into this whole idea. Veroinotan kitabla mirubaat. You have to be able to make out, that's what it seems to be saying, you have to be able to make out a square in there, which seems to be saying you cannot use a circle and then fill up based on the circle being a separate area than the area around it. Mashma only kitabla hudashori. We're only being matir, the square. And the reason for this would be, I mean, not because we like squares more than we like circles, although there are people like that, but because there is a problem in using the circle because of the very issue that you're not leaving any space at all. So when we're using a square, then we know that we're going to have them at least diamond-like against the other squares in order to make a difference. But when we're dealing with the circle, then nothing really is separating it at all. So the Braita seems to be saying we're not going to go that far with a graphical representation and say it's mutter. Mashma alav hachi aser. Answers the Gemara, that's true, but it has nothing to do with the issue of Rabbi Yochanan. That is talking about la kuli ba kula achrina, la hatir rosh tor hayotse mimena. Remember we asked before, what's the point of having these gvulot? We weren't quite sure about the gvulot because they weren't giving us really three tvachim in between, so they weren't a solution. So, I mean, if they're not a solution, then we'd have to come up with a solution anyway, even if we didn't have the gvulot. Now, it turns out that actually, at last, the Gemara is coming and telling us, now there is a technical definition of a full-scale, recognized aruga. And what is that? That even those, there's two ways of understanding that. This, either it's going dafka, according to Shmuel, who holds that there is a Rosh Tor in an Aruga, or as Tosfos suggests, Lav Dafka. I mean, it could be, as Rashi rather himself suggests, it could be that this would be true according to everybody. Because when we said there's no Rosh Tor in an Aruga, remember we were talking about one Aruga next to another Aruga, but that doesn't mean that there wouldn't be a din of a Rosh Tor of an Aruga when it's abutting a field. So what would allow a Rosh Tor of an Aruga to be given a heter to plant right up against a field? That was what we were asking. So what would make it clearly delineated as an Aruga? So it would need a tefach that would be around it. But that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. We don't need a technical definition of an Aruga over here in order to be matir something. So fine, so it won't be a Rosh Tor. Maybe it doesn't need the Rosh Tor. There's no fields around it. I don't know. But that's irrelevant to our discussion. You've got one large field, and you want to make as much use as you can of the area. Fine. So this is a great idea. Use a circle, and you won't get the rights of a Rosh Tor, which you don't need. But meanwhile, you will have utilized the area beautifully, and you can have the whole thing basically planted the way that you want it to, as long as you're careful that there's always some type of graphical delineation, even including Shasiva Erev. So you've got circles, and you've got small distances, and you've got Shasiva Erev, and put them all together, and Farmer Ira has got a very useful way to plant his field. And this, of course, is going to cost us some money if we go visit, but what can you do? It's well worth a living expression of Hilchos Kelayim.